All right. So yeah, we're going through Matthew. If you guys have been with us, you know we've been going through Matthew. If you came like a year ago and it's your second time back, we're still in Matthew, right? And we'll probably be in Matthew for like maybe another 6 months or a year. But I want to say this, like as we've been going through Matthew, you know, we're going kind of chapter by chapter or section by section. It struck me a couple weeks ago when Ryan was sharing that it's not like, oh, we just finished C and now we're doing D and then we finished D, so we're moving to E. It's like every week that someone is sharing from here as we've decided to go through Matthew, I feel like it's actually God who's saying, like, this is what I want to speak to you guys. Yeah. Like, not just that it's in the Bible, but, like, this is the message for this community. And so when Ryan was sharing about the rich young ruler, and I've heard that story growing up, and it just dawned on me, like, no. This is not, like, a Bible study about this text. This is not, it's like, what God is saying to our community was, you're the rich young ruler. Not the rich young ruler in here, but the rich young ruler in here. Like, God was speaking to our community saying, you all are the rich young ruler, the privileged, right? I mean, the educated, the wealthy, living in the Tech Bay area, the influential. We're all young. And if you're not young, it's a corporate word, so you're young, right? It's gotta stop thinking so individualistically, right? And I'm not rich. Well, look at someone who's rich collectively, right? We're rulers. We have influence in the Bay Area. Like, God was speaking to us as a community. And what God was saying to us is, yeah, Ark. I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but I think we're kind of known. We're not, like, super famous, but, like, we're kind of known, right? Okay, maybe I'm wrong. But we're kind of known, like, when children try to come to Jesus, people are like, no. When the rich young ruler came, like Ryan said, he made it all the way to the front, unimpeded, and he knelt down right in front of Jesus. Like, people knew him, like, let him through. That's our community. Whether it's as a church or in the workplace, we have that influence. And as a community, I mean, we've been serving and following the Lord here for how many years now? Like, going after this thing, saying, God, we want to see revival. We want to see revival. But what did Jesus say to the rich young ruler? You lack one thing. You lack one thing. And it wasn't the possessions. What he was saying was, I'm exposing your idol because the thing that you lack is your love for me. Like, you're doing everything right. But the love, that was a word for our community. That hit me. Like, God, where's my love, my burning passion for you? So as we're going through this series on Matthew, I just want you to know it's not just a study chapter by chapter. It's like it's actually what God is saying to our community right now. It was also really interesting because I hadn't thought about it before when Jesus starts kind of going over the Ten Commandments with the rich young ruler, but he starts with the back end, right? And it's all about him and people, and he's like, I've kept all these commands. And the Ten Commandments, God gave them to Moses, right? People were enslaved in Egypt. He pulled them out of Egypt. And the whole goal of getting out of Egypt was God said, I'm going to meet with you. Like when Moses went to Pharaoh and he said, set my people free, it wasn't set them free because you're working them too hard and you're not paying them. No, it was like, set us free so that we can go and worship. That was the whole point. God said, I'm going to meet with you. And so finally they're free. There's the plagues and everything. They're going to meet at this specific mountain. And God says, you need to prepare yourselves. You can't just show up. Like, this is like a date, right? You need to get ready. And so he's like, and I think it was a week. I didn't look. You know, you can fact check me. And they're supposed to wash themselves and ritual purification, all this. I think he even said, don't even tie up your animals because if an animal even touches this mountain, they'll die. Because my glory, my holiness is going to descend on this mountain. So get ready. People kind of freaked out. And they were like, you know what, Moses? You know, I don't know how good I've been living, and I might die. So God was going to meet with all of them. He said, you all come up on this mountain. That's why I picked it. It's like you can all maybe crowd around, fit on here. Like, but they turned it into like a representative religion. Said, no, Moses, you go. Just you, and that's good enough. You represent us. See what he's going to say, and hopefully you come back. Originally, it was, we were all supposed to go on the mountain and meet with God. God gives them the Ten Commandments, and these Ten Commandments are like the epitome of morality. You know, don't kill people. right? Don't steal things that are not yours. Don't try to take someone else's husband or wife. Like, it's the epitome of what it means to be human, right? I mean, it's like a very low bar of what God is saying. It's like, look, guys, I know I'm God and I'm perfect. Here's like a really low bar for what it means to barely be human, right? Like, don't kill each other. Don't steal things. Don't lie to each other. That's what it was. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Oh my gosh, these Ten Commandments are so... But even then, it was a low bar. It's still too high. So this rich young ruler comes before Jesus, like Ryan was sharing. And if anyone's blessed, it's him, right? Because he's rich. And he's young. And most young people I meet, very ambitious, you know, and they're like, I want to accumulate wealth, like a portfolio. And not being greedy, I just want to be comfortable. I want to take care of my family. I want to make sure that my children are set for life, right? Take care of my mom, my dad, all good things. And all these young people will work like 50, 60, 70 hours a week to get rich. And then I was driving through Walnut Creek. I see all these wealthy people who are older. They're rich. They did it. And then, not all of them, but it's like they're spending their money trying to look young again, like with the cars they buy and the clothes and the other things. But, I mean, he had God's favor. He was rich, he was young, and any wealthy people that I know that are like actually like really wealthy, not just, you know, well off, they don't view wealth as something to like use to buy things. They view wealth as a means of either controlling or influencing things. Like, wealth is used to increase power, to influence elections. It's not like, oh, I want $1 million, so I'm gonna buy everything I want. Like, the wealthy people that I know or that I've heard on podcasts, I don't really know them, they see wealth as like, it's not a shopping spree. It's like, I use this to control things, to create things. You had a rich, young ruler. If anyone was blessed and favored by God, it was this young man. And when Jesus says to him, you lack, and he turns around and walks away, disciples freak out because they're like, I'm nowhere near that guy's level. If he can't make it into the kingdom, who can? And so Jesus shares this parable, Matthew 20. For the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. A denarius was about, they say, like a day's wages. And going out about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to them he said, you go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right, I'll give to you. How would you like that? Like, they don't even tell you what they're going to pay you. They're like, at the end of the day, come see me. I mean, you've got to be desperate to take that job. So they went, going out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing. And he said to them, why do you stand here idle all day? They said to him, because no one has hired us. He said to them, you go into the vineyard too. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last up to the first. And when those who were hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. The rest are probably thinking, I'm going to get more. Now, when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, these last worked only an hour, and you've made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat. But he replied to one of them, friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I chose to give this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge, or do you envy my generosity? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. God's response to his disciples saying, then who can get the kingdom, was this parable. And a parable, I guess a simple way I can try to describe it was, it was like a riddle. It wasn't readily apparent. I've heard Bill Johnson say the reason why Jesus spoke in parables was because he is high. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter. It's the glory of kings to seek it out. Jesus would often sometimes say things that were offensive, and people would turn around and walk away. But other people would come to you and say, like, teacher, that's a really hard saying, or that's really messed up. What do you mean by that? He's either going to draw you in or you're going to walk away, but he's not going to make you more accountable than what you're ready to hear. It's a parable that he's telling here. I remember one time when I was a kid growing up and, you know, oldest of six kids. My father was an immigrant to this country. I think I've said it before, when he came here, he didn't speak much English, right? And like 30-something years later, he still speaks maybe the same amount of English, right? And I don't know why that's so funny, but... No, it is. It is. It is. It actually is. You know, it's like we tried everything. You know, like Hooked on Phonics, if you guys know that's like Sesame Street. It didn't work. None of that stuff worked. You know, and like my dad and grandmas would say, like, you know, if people really want to speak to me, they'll learn Korean. And I was like, okay, I see your point, you know. But he came to this country, an immigrant in this country. I'm the oldest six kids. You know, we eventually moved into, when we were moving on up, we moved into a three-bedroom apartment, right? There was one bedroom, obviously, for my parents, and then one bedroom, obviously, for all the kids, and then another bedroom for my father's books. And so, yeah, because he had hundreds of them, and so they needed a place. And so we had like three bunk beds. Like, that's how we grew up, loving it. One day my father came up to us and he's like, we're going on a vacation. And we were like, only people on TV go on vacations. Like, where are we going? And he's like, we're going to Disneyland. I know, it wasn't even like it was like all out. It wasn't even like working our way. He was like, we're going to Disneyland. We got so excited. And so we hop in the van, and there's like, I think it was like a seven-passenger van, but, you know, six kids and two adults, that's eight people. And so, you know, I don't know how we did it, but we all squished together. Maybe someone was, like, lapping somebody. But on the way there, there was no Waze. There was no Yahoo Maps. There was no, you know, there's just signs, right? And, you know, my dad's, you know, English abilities. And we got lost, right? We got lost. So he pulls over somewhere. And I think it was like a Home Depot he pulls over. And as soon as he gets out of the car, there's like a crowd of people standing there. And they start like rushing towards him. And I was maybe like 11 years old. And I'm like, what's going on? And they're like all running towards him. And my dad, you know, he always wore a suit. And so he walks out of the van. And he's surrounded now by like 15, 20 people. And like they're like raising their hand. And, you know, they're trying to speak English. He's trying to speak English. No one's really communicating. You know, and they thought he was going to hire them for a job. And then I hear him say the words, Disneyland. And they look confused, and maybe they thought, is this man hiring for Disneyland? Okay. Finally, one of them, you know, they communicate, they understand. The rest of them, I see them turn around, walking away slowly back to where they ran from. And the man kind of tells them, oh, you know, this way and that way. And my dad's shaking his head and smiling, which is the clear universal sign of, I have no idea what you're saying. He gets back in the car and we drive off. And that experience has just, like, stayed with me. How desperate people are. And in this parable, those people are desperate. I mean, here's their plan. To feed my family, I'm going to go to the marketplace and stand there. That's their plan. And wait. And wait. And wait. And if no one comes and chooses me, no one eats. They're desperate. And so when someone shows up and says, I'll hire you, you're like, I'm going. If someone shows up and says, don't even talk about payment right now, just come with me, they go. They're desperate. They're desperate. And that's who this master is calling. And maybe some of us here are not desperate like that financially. But maybe you're desperate over a situation in your life or in your family's life, and you have no control. You have no plan. All you can do is wait and hope that someone stronger, bigger, more powerful, more capable shows up. You know, like, we recently moved. When Erin and I first got married, she was a lady up here giving announcements. right? The fine looking lady. So I married her for more than just that, but you know. When we first got married, we moved to Oakland, and we felt kind of called to the city. When I was growing up, I just drove through Oakland, right? I grew up in San Francisco, then moved out to the East Bay. Oakland has become like this new hotspot, right? Like all the tech companies want to move there and like artists and all this stuff. So 7 years ago, we got married. We're walking around this area in Oakland, and I've never wanted to plant a church because my dad's a pastor, if you didn't know that. And so I was like, I see all what happens, right? Like, it's hard work, and you have to deal with people, and, right? You can't just go in a cubicle and shut the door. Like, it's just people all day, and I don't know why. We were walking around this area in Oakland. It's called Jingletown. Like, I felt this charge, and I know you giggled, right? Like, Jingletown. I'll tell you why it's called Jingletown. But, like, I felt this charge of, like, I told Aaron, I was like, I would like to plant a church here. And I was like, did I just say that? Because I don't want to plant a church. We didn't move there, so I didn't plant a church. We moved to around Lake Merritt, Adams Point. It was a great area for us. About a year living there, my parents have a house in Pleasant Hill, and there was an opening, a vacancy, and I said, Aaron, let's not pay rent. Let's save money. Let's move to Pleasant Hill. And, you know, she was just like, doesn't really matter to me. Let's go. And so she's like, if you think we should go, let's go. So we moved, and I mean, I can't believe it, but for like 4 years, we didn't have to pay rent. I know. I feel like there's a little bit of judgment, just a little bit. No, I was like, you no kidding. You call yourself a Bay Arean. And I was like, I mean, yeah, it was a blessing. I mean, it was a huge blessing. And like, you know, I think I was doing ARC ministry or pastoral work, you know, and so like it definitely helped allowing us to like stay in the area, not having to pay rent. We just paid utilities because, you know, I felt like I got to do something. So I was like, I'll pay all the utilities. Well, obviously, right, because we're there using, we should. And like we'll pay the landscaping stuff and we'll take care of the house. Anything breaks, we'll fix it. So about for 4 years, we stayed there. And then recently my parents said, hey, we're going to sell the house. And so I was like, cool, no problem. Like, we've been here for 4 years. That's great. And then they came back and said, actually, we're not going to sell it. I was like, cool, okay. Then we'll stop looking. Maybe we'll stay here. Maybe God wants to stay. Because we were looking for apartments over and over again. Doors were opening and closing, opening and closing. That happened a couple more times. And like the third or fourth time that my parents kind of went back and forth, I started getting a little annoyed. And I was like, look, guys. I mean, this is, and I don't say look, guys, to my parents. But I was like, parents, this is your house. You've let us stay here. I'm grateful for that. But could you just make a decision? Because when you keep changing your mind, it really impacts us as well. You know, they felt apologetic and all that, of course. So they said, okay, we're going to sell it. I said, okay, thank you. Going back on Craigslist apartment hunting, and Olivia, actually, just down the street from our house, the best early childhood development center opened up. It's called Center of Gravity, and I'm not just saying that. It actually is the best, pioneer, cutting edge, the top early education leaders started it, founded it. It's like Erin, my wife, is in education. I am too, but I don't know all that other stuff. She researched it, and she's like, oh my gosh, I can't. And their tuition was lower than what it would cost us for childcare, so sending Olivia there was such a blessing. She loved it. They would do experiments, and she would come back, and she told us about the eclipse and all that. It's an amazing, like, STEM preschool, okay? So it was really sad. I said, the saddest thing for me, though, is having to pull her out of there because she loves it. You know, she'll come back home, and she's the teacher. I'm the student. And when I talk, Silent Coyote, right? And she won't let me talk, if you guys know what Silent Coyote is. So that was the saddest part for me, to pull her out. But I was like, you know, I gave them the date. We're moving in at this time, so this will be our last day. Like, we're so sorry to see you go. I'm like, I'm sad too. All that's done. A week after I did that, my dad says, actually, we're not going to sell. So you guys should stay. And I was like, we were looking to go, but rent prices really increased dramatically over the past 4 or 5 years since we've paid rent. And maybe we should stay. Maybe this is God saying, actually, stay. You don't have to go back to Oakland right now. And so I told Aaron, let's stay. And I emailed Center of Gravity. Good news, guys. Your favorite student is not leaving. I didn't get a response back. So I went down there like the next day, talked to the person there, and she was like, I've just been avoiding sending that email because we have a long waiting list. And the moment you said that you guys were pulling her out, we gave your spot away to the next person on the waiting list. And I'm so sorry. And I was like, it's cool. I walked home, but as I was walking home, I started getting angry at my parents. And I was like, you took this opportunity away from my daughter, your granddaughter. How could you? And then there was another part saying, "Foo, they let you live rent-free for 4 years. How can you even be ungrateful for anything?" And they're like, these two sides of me is like, I know, but still, they should make up their minds. This is unreasonable. And there was this battle inside of me. There was this battle. I really struggled, and I had to like come before the Lord and say, like, God, there's this ingratitude in my heart. That even though I've been blessed so much, I mean, I calculated the rent. It's like over 100 grand for 4 years, right? It's, I mean, over 100 grand. Like, I don't even know where that money would come from right now. 100 grand, all this, and like, I struggled with that. And I was like, there was this ingratitude in my heart and like offense in my heart and like anger in my heart. But at the same time, knowing I shouldn't really feel those things towards my parents. I think that's kind of how these workers felt. Like, maybe on one hand, they were like, thank you for choosing me and giving me a denarius. But on the other hand, they're like wrestling with, it's like, this is not fair. This is not right. I worked the whole day. That person worked 3 hours. That person worked 1 hour. They got the same as me. This is where I want to stop like preaching and just like share with you what I think God is saying to our community. Like, I feel like what God was saying through Ryan was this: you're the rich young ruler. Love me. Love me. And what I feel like God is saying today is, you got to get rid of this thing in your heart. Jesus says in this parable, are you upset because you envy my generosity? And I'm telling you, I feel like what God is saying to each and every single one of us right now is, you need to get this envy thing out of you. You need to get it out. And I didn't like that I felt this ungratefulness towards my parents. It was ugly. It was embarrassing. It's shameful. But I felt like God exposed it, not because he wanted to condemn it. He exposed it because he wanted to heal it. And I feel like what God is saying is, there's envy, and I want to expose it right now so that I can heal it. Here are some signs of envy. Complaining. If you complain, there's envy somewhere in here. It's a sign. It's a sign of envy, the complaining, the grumbling. If there's comparison, that's also a sign of envy. How does envy come about? Comparison. And we all do it. We all do it. Or another word instead of comparing, evaluating. Overanalyzing. Comparison leads to insecurity. It leads to envy. It also leads to pride. If I compare myself to one person, man, I feel great. And I'm sorry for looking at you, but you just happen to be there, right? Like, I'm not actually saying that. And then if I compare myself to another person, it's like, oh, I don't feel so manly, right? Like, it's, and again, you're just having to be there. That's it. So comparison leads to that of like, on one hand, being super insecure, and on another hand, being way overconfident, right? If we should compare ourselves to anyone, it should be the standard, Jesus. And then we're like, okay, we all fall short, so we all need help. It's that comparison also that robs your gratitude. I used to work at for a children's ministry. It was actually my dad's church, and the parents got together, and I had not really worked for churches before, and the parents got together around Christmas time, and one of the moms came up to me, and that she was like, Pastor Joe, parents should want to show their appreciation, and she started pulling out an envelope, and all the Koreans in this room or Asian people are like, I know what's coming, right? And like when my wife and I first got married, it was like a culture shock because, yes, I'm Korean or Korean-American, and she's like Basque, or they would say Dutch, but I'm like, no, you guys are actually German, right? Well, that's what the tests say. Well, the whatever. Anyway, the tests. I had her tested before I got married. No, I'm like, no, the inherit 23andMe and the Ancestry.com. Oh my gosh, I got lost on my thing. So our culture clash was actually this. It was more NorCal, SoCal, like Warriors, Lakers. Like that was like one of our big fights in our first year of marriage, right? It was mostly because me, I get upset when the Warriors would lose. But it wasn't like, you know, she would just say, I'm white, right? It wasn't white culture and Korean culture clashing that much because even though I am Korean ethnically, I'm pretty Korean-American, like born and raised here, right? So, but this was one moment where I was like, is this a culture thing of like Korean and Americans or whatever? Because like, it was a shock to me that in her family, they have envelopes too, but in envelopes, they would buy a card. And this card says the thing that you want to say. Like, there are options. And you don't even have to write it. You just go and look for one that's close to what you would say or says is better, and you buy that one, right? And then all you do is sign your name on it, and then you put it in the envelope, and then you give it to the person, but without any money. Because the money you would have gotten was spent on that card, right? So I was like, what? Why? What is this? And so for me, the way I grew up, someone hands you an envelope, you're like, there's money inside, right? Usually not even a card, just money, right? And it's like random. Sometimes it's nice, right? Like all 20s, but sometimes it's like a bunch of ones and fives and a 20. It's like, you know, it's like $37.50 or whatever it is. Like it's just random money, right? And so like you see envelope, you start thinking, oh my gosh, what am I gonna get? And so she's talking, we appreciate. I'm like, And then she hands me the envelope and like I'm holding it, trying not to like feel what the denominations are. Thank you. Bless you. Turn around the corner, rip that sucker open, $50. Now, for me, some of you guys don't look impressed. I was impressed. Okay, I was like, and I was expecting nothing. So $50, I was like, oh my gosh, these parents, they appreciate me, oh my gosh. I was like, I guess I should be nice to the kids. So, I was like, and then I run into my friend who did the youth ministry. I did children's, he did youth, because I guess, you know, they trusted him more. But I was like, I have younger kids, though. And he comes to me, he's like, hey, did you meet the so-and-so's mom? Did she give you an envelope? I was like, yes, she did. He's like, how much did they give you? I was like, $50, son? And he's like, they gave me $100. And I was like, what? They gave you $100? Because you do youth group and teenagers, and they're what? They're twice as old, so it's twice the work. You work twice as hard as me? And then he smiled. He's like, just kidding. They gave me $50. And I was like, Merry Christmas. Take my $50. Here you go. You're a better man than I am, right? When she gave me the $50 and I was expecting nothing, I was genuinely thankful. But the moment I compared it to someone else's blessing, and I was like, wait, hold on a second. Why did you get twice what I got? We work at the same place. I work just as hard as you. It robbed me of all that joy. I felt like I had like multiple personality disorder. Because I was like joyful, thankful, angry, upset, embarrassed, right? I'm like all these feelings coming at once. But that comparison robs us of our joy. And if you've been lacking that joy, there's that comparison and envy that's been stirring around down there. And maybe it hasn't popped its head up and said, look at me. But it's down there, sucking your joy away like a tapeworm. Yeah. The greed of demanding more, of being upset at what you didn't get. I think that's what God is going after in our hearts today. So those are some of the signs of envy. But what are the fruits? James 3:16 says this, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. So envy is not just like this little thing I got to work on. Like God takes it so seriously that he says, wherever you find envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. We think envy is just like this little thing I got to work on. It's like, but from that comes, I mean, is there disorder in your life, in your relationships? Maybe you go to a workplace and there's a lot of disorder. There's probably a lot of envy and selfish ambition in that workplace. Are there addictions that you just can't break? It's a heart thing. Maybe there's some envy that we need to deal with that God is saying today. So what can we do? There's something that I've been trying to practice, and it's just to be grateful. Gratitude. Thankful for what we have. And these are all things we know. But I'm the kind of person that's always looking for upgrade, right? I mean, I buy the iPhone, and I'm already Googling the next one, right? When is that one coming out? And then, like, I flip my phone, right? Which means, like, I sell it on Craigslist, take that money, buy the next one, right? Then the iPhone 6 comes out, and then I get the iPhone 6S because it's, like, half an inch bigger, or I don't even use all the benefits, probably, right? And now the iPhone 8 is coming out, and I still have the iPhone 6 now because I'm just being grateful for my phone. I'm like, I mean, that's ridiculous, right? To say like I have an iPhone 6, that's ridiculous. My kids look at me like I'm a baller, right? They look at me, they're like, Mr. O, I noticed you wore a different pair of shoes this week. How many shoes you got? I'm like, more shoes than I have feet, right? Mr. O, how many rooms you got in your house? Back when I lived in my parents' house, I didn't tell them it was my parents' house, though. I said, my house, I got 4 bedrooms. How many people live in there? 4 of us. You mean each person has their own bedroom? Is it a mansion? I mean, I can be ungrateful, but just being grateful for what I have. I mean, there's so much to be grateful for. I went to a church called Mosaic, and there was a pastor there named Earl McManus. And he took us through something called the character matrix. I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now. But he was talking about the journey from greed to generosity, right? Because Jesus said, do you envy me because of my generosity? And it starts with greed. We talked about that. Talks with gratitude, being thankful for what we have. And he said the next step to kind of help us get there is what he called 51%. But he called it wholeness. You would think wholeness is 100%, but he said 51%. And he said that's the principle of always giving a little bit more than you take. So the first step is if you're stuck in greed, you're just looking at what you don't have, and you're angry. He said gratitude is like, don't get angry about what you don't have, just look at what you do have and be thankful. But the next step is now wholeness. As you begin to meditate on what you have and you're grateful for what you have, you're not feeling the sense of lack. He says you can actually start to give a little bit more than you take. Now he's not saying give it all, give 51%, take 49%. Just leave everything a little bit better than when you came. Right? Leave every person just a little bit better. Leave a little bit more than you take, 51%. That's something I think we could all do. And he said, as you do that, and your faith and your trust and your gratitude begins to grow, he said, you come to the place where you can just be generous, where you can start to even give without expecting anything in return. And that word generous means, comes also from the root word to generate, or it means of noble birth, royalty, right? When you're in that place of generosity, when you're like living by the Spirit, you're like, I can create wealth. I can take these stones and make bread, so I can give you all the bread you need. And I don't need to worry that I'm not going to have bread. I can make wealth. I can create wealth. Like, that's the level I want to start living at. Okay. Here's the reward. Because God's not fair. He's generous. He's not always fair. He's generous. So what about those people that showed up in the beginning of the day and they were working all day, sweating, toiling in the sun? They get paid the same amount as everyone else. What's their reward? Here's their reward. Now when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius, and on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, these last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat. But he replied to one of them, friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. There was a reward. And the reward, for those of us who feel like, God, I've given you my life, I've given you everything, and I don't seem like I'm better off than the person next to me. The reward is that he said to them what? He called them friend. He said, friend. He didn't say worker. He didn't say employee or slave. He said, friend.
And this story comes right after the rich young ruler when he says, you have everything, but do you love me? Is my friendship the reward? Or is every other thing a blessing? Do you count how close you are to me? Do you count how much you think I love you or like you by how much stuff I give you? Or is the fact that you are my son, my daughter, my friend the reward? Church, this is what God is saying to our community. We can't compare anymore. We can't complain anymore because envy killed Jesus. Pontius Pilate said he discerned the envy among them, and they handed him over to be crucified because of the envy in their hearts. Envy is what killed Jesus. And when we bring our friends here, when we go out there, I don't want to represent just a crucified Jesus. I want the living Jesus. And we can't do that if we have envy in our hearts. I mean, we got to get really good at celebrating one another. We got to get really, really good at celebrating one another. You know, we have friends, and we have friends who've been trying to get pregnant, and I didn't know this, and they would start asking us. When we got pregnant with Olivia, I started saying we get pregnant because everyone says that. So when we got pregnant with Olivia, people, I didn't know this, but they started asking Aaron, what are you guys doing? My response was, what you're supposed to be doing. And what they meant was like, but like, what else? And I was like, I'm not sure what you mean, but they were trying to conceive, and I didn't know about this because people didn't talk about it, but like a lot of our friends were struggling to conceive a child. And they had acted like they didn't want children, but they did. And they were trying, and it had been years. We're driving down somewhere, and we're meeting with another friend, and we're sharing with him, like, so many of our friends lately, like, we found out have been struggling to have kids. And like, they're asking us, what did you do? And we're like, we don't know. We just have kids. And I didn't know that the people we were talking to were also struggling to have kids. And they hadn't talked about it. And it was tearing them up inside. And I wasn't as sensitive because I kind of made it funny. It's like, we're just doing, we're just having kids, you know. Nah, nah. And like, they're sitting there and they're smiling and they're laughing, you know. And every time we post a picture of our kids on Instagram, they're liking it and they're commenting, beautiful child and all these things. But all the while inside, they're aching for their own child. But you would never know it because they celebrate our children every post, every time they see them. They've got no envy in their hearts. And I just pray for them. I'm like, God, they've been a father and mother to so many. God, I believe that they're going to be a father and mother to one. That's the kind of community we need to be. Where we celebrate each other. And yes, we mourn with those who mourn, but we want to rejoice with those who rejoice. We always talk about, oh, you got that car. Oh, that girl said yes to you on the date. Oh, you got the promotion, right? That the promotion you've been working for. Whatever happens, we need to celebrate. I mean, it happens in my marriage. If something great happens to my wife, I'm genuinely excited for her. And I never think, why not me? You got pregnant, why not me? Right? Like I want to feel, actually, I've told her, like, anyway. Jesus says, I no longer call you servants because a servant doesn't know his master's business. I call you friends, for everything I've learned from my Father I've made known to you. The reward, praising, come on up. The reward is that he calls us his children. He makes us his heirs. He calls us his friends. Like, that's the reward. I don't have much else to say except I think it's a simple word where God is saying, we need to really go after this. A couple of weeks ago or months ago, I think I shared on the passage in Matthew where it says, if anyone sinned against you, go and confront them. If they don't listen, you take two or three brothers with you, and if they don't, bring before the church. And it's not a confronting where it's like, you did something wrong, but it's about creating unity in the body, forgiveness, restoration, healing. That's what it's meant to do. But here's the point of all that. The reason why if people are sinning against each other in our church, the reason why we're going to confront is, yes, we want the forgiveness and the healing and the restoration to happen. We want to call you to live your best and highest life, okay? But here's the thing. And then Jesus talks a little bit later, and he says, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Like, what he's saying in that passage is, when there's disunity in the body, I'm not there. But when there's unity, and wherever there are two or three gathered in my name, I come. Like, I don't want to just live a moral, holy life because it's the right thing to do or makes me feel good. It's like, as we start to live this way, we'll start to see God's glory and his weight come more and more. And here's the thing, God, the word glory actually means weight, and it's actually like a weight that can crush you. Oftentimes when God's weight would come on somebody, his glory, it's as people would fall down like they were dead. And here's the thing, if God's glory would come and it would lift, it would come and it would lift, it would come and it would lift, it would come and it would lift. But if we want his glory to stay, because that's what revival is, his revival is when God's glory stays and it grows and it increases in measure and measure, then we need to get serious about all this stuff that we're learning about on Sundays and throughout the week. Because I want God's glory to come. Because I've been praying for people. I've been praying for family members and friends. You know what's going to get them saved? The glory of God, resting on his people. And it comes when we say, God, envy, this stuff in me. Yeah, it's in here, it's ugly, but you know what? I'm exposing it because you're going to heal it. I just come into your presence because I don't know what to do. Scripture says, search me and know me, God. Because you know what? I can't even search myself. I don't even know what to look for. There are too many rabbit holes and issues to go after. So God, you search me because you know what to look for. And when you find it, heal it. And church, I'm saying, like, I want to get serious about this. I'm 39. I think, you know, average life expectancy is 70. I'm above average. I want to live to at least 90, maybe more. But I'm like, man, I've got maybe 30 years, maybe 40 years, and that's not guaranteed, but maybe. And I'm like, man, God, that little bit of time I've left, I just really want to live it. I want to work that field. I don't want to complain or grumble. I just want to be grateful. I want to be grateful. Church, I don't have anything more to say. I just want to worship. I just want to respond to God. Father, we just come to you right now. God, you are speaking to us as a community. And your kingdom is like a vineyard field that needs laborers. And there are people who are standing idly by, waiting for someone to invite them. God, we just confess because we don't have a plan or a strategy necessarily how to deal with our hearts. Our only strategy is to confess, come on our knees and say, God, I need you. God, you tell me what you think about me. You tell me who I am, and I'm going to believe you, and I'm going to reject everything else. So Holy Spirit, just come and minister to us.